thanks so much for staying with us. You're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. Let's continue our conversation about the dynamics reshaping our China policy. Oh Isan joins us now. He's a senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Isan, thank you for joining us this evening. If I may begin our conversation with the Xinjiang cotton issue, I'm wondering what the escalating tensions over the Xinjiang cotton issue tells you about China's relationship with international companies, you know, that are there, that want access to their markets. How are you reading this controversy?
Well, I think a lot of this global conglomerates, for example, in governments and so on the one hand, they do need their factories in China for making these garments, which they then sell to both within China as well as the rest of the world. On the other hand, of course, in the, shall we say, the mother countries of many of these corporations, such as H&M and so on, there are people who are obviously very concerned about what is happening in Xinjiang. There are various accusations, there are various allegations and so on. So in order very often to placate the sentiments of the, shall we say, the popular sentiments in the mother countries of these various corporations such as H&M and so on, they would have to declare themselves, for example, not to use the cotton from Xinjiang and so on. But that, of course, would hurt their business in China, in which they sell, shall we say, the bulk of their products, the garments, and also they have various factories and also using, obviously, again, the cottons from Xinjiang. So now, of course, they will have to source their cottons somewhere else.
Right. I just think it's interesting, Isan, that, you know, this has become a geopolitical, event now. But more interesting to me has been China's reaction to this, the kind of tit-for-tat sanctions we have on one hand, the EU and the US and Britain and other Western countries. And now we have a similar counterattack by China. How are you seeing this play out? Does this tell you anything new about how China is presenting itself to the rest of the world?
Well, China is now presenting itself as potentially not only a rising power, but indeed a major power in its own right. And of course, then when some other corporate entities, such as I think in this case H&M and so on, would try to, for example, take a stand in, for example, not using the cottons from Xinjiang and so on, China, in its own opinion, as a major power, would have to retaliate in kind. And in this case, it is, for example, the boycott of various H&M products. And whether we like it or not, China is now, so we say, the major consumer market for a lot of major brands around the world. Mm. So if these major brands do not toe China's line, they indeed risk this sort of, shall we say, market retaliation from China. Yeah.
What's interesting, I think, to follow on this is Muji and Uniqlo did in fact advertise that they were getting their fabrics from Xinjiang on the basis that Xinjiang cotton is seen to be of high quality. And I wonder if, you know, the tendency in the West to want to anchor products and marketing around human rights issues is something that we're going to see an eclipse of in the near future, as it becomes increasingly clear that countries like China won't play along with these rules.
Well, China has not been sort of responding to this sort of boycotts and so on. I think not only recently, but since at least if I could remember the mid-1990s, when, for example, the U.S. under the Clinton administration, they were in a sense forced to dissociate human rights issue, from the trade issues with China, right? Mm. In granting China the so-called most favored nation trading status. Whether you like it or not, China, with the world's largest population and the rising middle class, is indeed a very huge market for a lot of companies, be they from the West or from China itself. So if you do not submit to China's needs and wants, you certainly do risk such boycotts or counter-boycotts from China. Yeah.
Isan, can I ask you about what you make of, you know, the comments coming up from officials in China, you know, comments or remarks like, you know, no more of this era of bullying, that the century of humiliation is now over. What are you making of comments like that? I find it very interesting. Do you?
Well, of course, the current Chinese administration is associating the, shall we say, Western treatment of China with, for example, the Opium War and so on, which happened, I think, more than 1.5 centuries ago. And as long as China has the market clout to sort of preclude this sort of various Western companies, so it would, of course, be able to continue to have its way, whether you like it or not.
But doesn't China also depend on markets in the West? I mean, isn't there a very fundamental interdependence between these major markets, China depending on the U.S. market, Europe, and vice versa?
Well, they to a certain extent, they do. But increasingly, I will give you one example. For example, when I used to go to China before the COVID pandemic, I would find that actually the domestic brands of T-shirts in China, they are selling much higher prices than those Western brands. For example, they would sell typical T-shirts in the range of even 1,000 renminbi, whereas a typical Western branded T-shirt would sell, let's say, maybe 100 or 200 renminbi. So I think they're increasingly sort of proud of their own market capacity and size. And with that, of course, they would be able to afford, they could afford to say no to the Western markets and so on.
Right. Yeah. So I completely agree with you that China has, you know, the upper hand in terms of market clout. It also has the financial firepower, financial investment firepower, one that Malaysia has benefited from. I'm wondering, given everything that you've said to us tonight, Isan, then how should Malaysia position itself, you know, in terms of us being a middle power with vulnerabilities in our economy? What do you see Malaysia having to do to secure our relationship with China while protecting our sovereignty?
Well, first of all, I need to protect myself by saying things publicly, and therefore I will quote our distinguished Prime Minister in announcing yesterday that the government is short of money nowadays, right? When you are short of money, therefore, logically, you could not be playing this sort of middle power role very effectively. All these issues about, you know, calling the foreign minister of China being the big brother and so on, I think it's, in a sense, a very pragmatic move, whether we like it or not. Some of us do, some of us don't. But the fact remains, whichever major powers, China or some of the Western powers, if they are able to invest in a major manner in this country, I think, at least personally, I would call them not only big brother, I would, might even call them father or even grandfather.
Isan, yeah. Well, I think we'll have to take a pause on that suggestion. But I want to come back. More seriously, you know, one of the ways in which the public talks about China is that it imagines it as a monolith. It's a singular entity, and that it operates, whether politically or in economic instances, with a single-mindedness. And what researchers seem to be suggesting is that they're actually much more complex layers and levels which these games are being played in terms of investments and such. How do we go forward in a much more nuanced way with our relationship, not just to China and Beijing, but also to, you know, various provincial level governments and state-owned enterprises that might be operating in Malaysia, but not necessarily at the behest of Beijing?
Yes, I totally agree with you. There is a stiff competition, for example, among the various provinces in China and even among the various major municipalities in China, not to mention among the various China state-owned enterprises which are operating in Malaysia. I still remember vividly when previously I was working in government, there was one Chinese state-owned enterprise which was then operating in Malaysia. They came to me with a complaint that they are being bullied by another company. I thought it must have been some other, shall we say, Western companies bullying them, right? Then they complained to me that it was indeed another state-owned enterprise from China which was bullying them, right? So, of course, we need to be cognizant of all these nuances in China's domestic and internal power struggles and so on. But that would presume that we really have a huge amount of knowledge about what is happening in China. So until such time as we are able to train such diplomatic personnel, for example, who are cognizant of the various struggles and competitions within China, well, what can we do except to once again, calling China the big brother?
Right. Ihsan, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. It's been such a pleasure talking to you, and we appreciate you sharing your insights with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. But before we leave you, a quick reminder. Don't forget to get all the latest news and information on COVID-19 vaccines at astroawani.com and the Astro Awani app. Thank you so much for watching. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off the evening.
We'll see you again tomorrow. Good night.